Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
133.
So good. We're like little angels. I love it. My name is Chama Sangeeta.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
She got so excited.
My name is Pridarshini.
And I'm Shamali.
All right. And we are on the final chapter of the Gita.
Dun, 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 dun.
Chapter 18, text number 39. Oh my God, we're flying.
Wow, guys. I can't believe it.
It almost gives me anxiety how fast we're going through it. Like, I'm not ready for it to be done.
I'm not ready.
I mean, there's a lot of really short. A lot of short purports.
Dear Lord. Krishna Chaitanya. Krishna Chaitanya.
There's a lot of short purports in the beginning of chapter 18. Mm-hmm.
Moving on. So where did we leave off, ladies? I got you.
Okay,
so,
good. That's great.
You both just stared into space.
I like zoned out.
I was like,
We were talking about happiness and happiness in the three modes. And we started talking about happiness in the mode of goodness and how it can be like poison at the beginning, but then so sweet like nectar at the very end. Mm-hmm. And that was the last verse we read. And we're going to continue on to happiness.
And we had a great discussion about self-compassion, really, right? Whenever you're going through it. And most of the time, we're not going to feel it when we're doing our sadhana, but you do it out of a sense of duty. And if you're burnt out, take a little space.
Yeah.
Then,
yeah.
And all of your spiritual activities, like you never regret them, actually. Like waking up early to chant, you never regret. Yeah. Chanting, you never be like, oh man, I really wish I didn't chant and I watched more TV in the meantime.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
There's always this sense of like, whenever you're doing something spiritual in the mode of goodness, you have no, hashtag no regrets, you know? Like no regrets, right?
And even if you might feel like, there was a point in my life in which I was doing like 7 different services in my temple.
Oh, wow.
I was, it was insane. And I was doing it for years and it was super, super heavy on my mind and body. I was helping in the kitchen. I was making garlands. I was.
What were those 7 services?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about them actually. Okay, so I was helping cook for the deities. I was helping, I would make garlands. I would teach Sunday school. I had a lot going on. I did the graphic design for the temple for like all the newspaper publications and also for like whatever they needed else. There was a bunch more. I can't even think of it. But
how did you feel during that time?
At first it was amazing because I was maybe in that mood of like, oh, I'm doing so many things and I feel great. And then over time I was really burned out.
Mm.
And it was so like, it was such a burnout that I wanted nothing to do with the temple, but it's like such an overreaction because it was so heavy and so much, right? So like it really taught me balance.
Right.
You know, balance of like, okay, yes, so lovely to do service, but you got to take care of your body. You got to take care of your mind. You got to be able to do the service.
Totally.
And therefore not overcommit. Not everything is a yes. You know, like it's okay to say no sometimes and just do good at the things that you're already doing. So
That is incredible. Wow.
Yeah. Balance is so important. And also to not feel that Krishna doesn't love us. Krishna will only love us if we're a pure devotee. No, I heard a quote that was beautiful. Krishna loves us because he's perfect. He's not waiting for us to become perfect because that would be conditional love.
Yeah.
And Krishna loves us unconditionally.
Mm. Yeah. Also, does Krishna say the word pure devotee? I think that might be one, like a term that we as people.
Goners.
Goners. You know, we have the mood of perfectionism, wanting to be great and get to Krishna and all of that. And then we attach that meaning. But Krishna just says my devotee. So just, you know, just try to be his devotee.
You know, another name for Krishna is Gunagrahi, which means that he looks at our intentions, not at our actions.
Mm. So thank God. That's good. Well, the intentions are always good, but action, the executable actions can use to work.
Well, anyways, that is the recap.
Amazing.
Shall we start?
La invocation, por favor, amigas.
Sí, sí.
You want to do it really Hispanic?
Yes, please.
Oh my
please.
God. Please.
I think you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know what to do, so I'm going to kind of follow your lead.
We're just gonna, we got this.
Oh, Magyana Timirandasya, Gyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshurun Militam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
That was incredible.
Shelly added an accent into it. I thought that was really...
I thought that's what you were doing.
I was just going to enunciate all the vowels very hard because that's what Hispanics do.
Shelly's like, nah, I'm going to add an accent to it.
I thought that's what we were doing.
It was great.
Accent. Muy bien.
Amigas.
Amigas. All right, translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. Incredible.
Bunch of culpa. I apologize for that idea.
Oh man, that was great. Okay, we are on chapter 18, text number
38.
38 or 39? 38. Oh my god, 38. Whoopsies. All right, we're on 38.
Yeah, we're on 38.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
What just happened?
So we were talking about happiness in the three modes. And we had only just done it in the mode first of goodness.
Yeah, we're about to hit the next one.
And you know, really, if you think about it, as far as happiness goes, because the previous text talked about it like being poison in the beginning, but nectar at the end. Think about anything we even want to achieve materially, going to the gym.
That's a big one, going to the gym, yeah.
Hard at the beginning.
Exactly. You're not going to get results after 1 week. A month, barely.
Even every time you go to the gym, you feel great after you go.
But not before you go.
But it's terrible. Yeah. It's like taking poison.
Not go today?
Yeah.
Okay. Shall I?
Yes, you shall.
Text 38. That happiness, which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be the nature of passion.
Wait, so what was the difference? I didn't catch it. One more time.
You know what I love about all modes of passion? They're confusing.
I know, they really are.
And I think it's because, and I was saying this in the, we do mic check at the beginning and we just talk nonsense so that he can check the sound. Yeah. And I was talking about this. I was thinking all the purports that have been, or all the texts that have been about mode of passion are confusing. Why? Because when you're in the mode of passion, you're confused. Yeah. You're all over the place.
No, but like, why is this confusing? This makes total sense.
Oh, okay. Enlighten us.
Yeah. Okay. So just to go back. So things that are, okay. So happiness in the mode of goodness, it tastes bad in the beginning, but it feels really good afterwards. Kind of like chanting early morning, right? Yeah. But passion is the opposite of that. So happiness in the mode of passion is amazing at the beginning, but it ends up being you feel really crappy about it afterwards.
But that's amazing. Good job. But also, what is the derived from contact of the senses with their objects?
I guess indulging the senses, watching a bunch of TV, eating a bunch of snacks, whatever the senses
want.
So the examples that I found for this were binge watching shows instead of sleeping, which feels fun in the moment, but it leaves you tired and regretful. Eating junk food, right? Tastes great in the beginning, but can cause long-term health issues. Right? Chasing validation on social media. It gives a temporary high, but it creates anxiety and insecurity in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great.
Yep.
Those are really good. Okay, that was actually not that confusing. I think I just have a stigma against mode of passion at this point.
No. This makes sense. Total sense. Okay. Everything in the mode of passion always feels good in the beginning. Yeah. But then you're like, oh crap, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Like even eating like a 12 dozen donuts feels amazing in the moment. And then afterwards you're like, oh no, I'm going to die.
So basically you can check if you're in the mode of passion. If you do something and you're enjoying it and then you regret it later, then you know that was in the mode 100%. Of passion. But if you do something and you enjoy it in the beginning, but it was also good at the end, then you're like fine.
You're fine.
Yeah. Like eating vegetables.
Yeah, vegetables is fine. That's neutral. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Nice. Cool.
Text 39.
Shama.
Okay, Krishna says, and that happiness which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance.
Do you have examples for this one?
Yeah. So happiness in the mode of ignorance. This is oversleeping or constant procreation. It feels like rest, but it actually leads to inertia and dissatisfaction. Another example is numbing feelings with alcohol or substances.
Yeah.
It offers a temporary escape, but increases suffering and confusion.
But wouldn't that be passion? Because the quote unquote, it feels good now, but it feels bad later.
I think, I think things that you're doing, right? Like actively doing is more passion, but like, I mean, alcohol has always been in the mode of ignorance, right? Because it's, associated with a food item that is in the mode of ignorance?
I could see both. I could see like at a party, people are drinking, dancing, mode of passion. Or I could see an alcoholic who's been drinking all day and has passed out on the couch. I think it's like
drinking all day type of thing. Yeah.
Okay. More of a consistent pattern where you're in like that delusion. So it's like someone who is like doing drugs every day and is not really aware of reality versus someone who took drugs once, enjoyed it really, and then hated it the next morning, whatever.
Right. Yep.
So continuous versus. Okay, I could see that.
And it's interesting. Yeah, for the person in the mode of ignorance, Prabhupada emphasizes how everything's illusion. There's no happiness in the beginning or the end versus in the mode of passion. Right. There might be some kind of ephemeral happiness in the beginning and distress at the end.
All right. So now we know what we need to do to have happiness in the mode of goodness.
It's funny. It just sounds so easy when you read it here, right? Like, okay, cool. Check. Yeah. I'm happy.
Do the tough thing first.
Do the tough thing first. You won't regret it, especially if it's a spiritual activity or if it's good for your body too. I think our bodies are temple. We don't talk about it enough, but like it's so important. This is the vessel that we've been given in this lifetime and we need to take care of it as much as possible. And so maintaining your body, your mind, your spirit is very important. And none of those things are fun in the beginning to do.
And I think it's interesting in the history of ISKCON, of this Bhakti Yoga institution, in the early days, I don't think they put enough emphasis on maintaining the body. Like I would hear stories from a lot of older devotees about how they would go to Mangalartik, then do book distribution all day, then go to bed so late after a day of being out preaching and then wake up again for Mangal, barely sleeping. And when they'd get back from book distribution, they'd eat like a pound of ice cream and there's no taking care of the body. And they just kind of had this mentality of like, well, we're not this body. And they'd just push and they were young. And
exactly. I think that was a big part, right? They're young. And so then they had so much energy for doing this wonderful work of preaching and doing.
Which was wonderful. Yeah. And then now it's kind of been this shift in perspective of so much emphasis on self-compassion. What does that mean? Taking care of the body, also being kind to yourself and Krishna loves us. It's like totally different.
Yeah. It's a, what is that called when you overcompensation? Well, not necessarily overcompensation, but compensation for that, which was an oversight before.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Text 40.
Yes. Me.
Chamali.
There is no being existing either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems, which is freed from these three modes born of material nature.
Okay. So demigods are also influenced by this.
Right. Everywhere, all over the universe.
Except Krishna.
Yeah.
That makes sense actually.
Yeah. There's another example. It's like even a monk, the most like person in the mode of goodness, they even experience moments of like restlessness and passion and tiredness and ignorance, right? So it's like everyone experiences this. So that's kind of, it's kind of liberating actually.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, haven't we said before that Krishna finished speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna on the battlefield, and 15 days after he spoke the Gita to Arjuna, which if you hear the Mahabharata that we had plugged in, it tells you the story of how Arjuna's children were killed in their sleep. And Arjuna and Krishna had just spoken to Arjuna about, we lament neither for the living nor the dead, equipoise, la la la, all these things. And Arjuna lost it when his children were killed. So we know this philosophy, but it doesn't mean we're not going to feel the human emotions. It's just, what do we do from there? We're going to feel the human emotions.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're all made up of goodness, passion, and ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Pradarshini.
41.
Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras are distinguished by the qualities born of their own natures in accordance with the material modes. O chastiser of the enemy.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a big shift from Indian culture in which people are born these
castes.
Yeah, caste, I guess you could say. And that's what you are, even though it might not fit your nature.
Right, right.
And I think one thing that I just, because I was trying to really understand, like, why is this verse here? And I think that Krishna's trying to say that your role in life should reflect your natural strengths and tendencies.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And not like societal labels or societal pressures.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. You're right. Why did he bring this up all of a sudden? Where did it come from?
I think he's literally going away. Like, I mean, he's already talked about action and working and happiness and all of these things. And I think literally like this verse is a natural segue out into a new topic.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see. Interesting. Right. Do you guys want to hear some of the nowadays, like how you...
What jobs would be for each one?
Not jobs, because this is not about what you do. This is about who you are.
It's your nature, right?
So this is these are just ChatGPT personality traits based on nowadays, based on these, okay?
Yeah.
So for Brahmanas, they're deep thinkers, reflective, and philosophical.
So like scientists, therapists?
Well, it doesn't matter what job.
Okay.
Because you can be a teacher who is actually... a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or this or that, right? Okay. Like your job in this society nowadays does not dictate what your nature is. That's the kind of the point, right? They also prefer solitude and contemplation. They're often detached from material wealth and focus on wisdom and inner growth. They enjoy teaching, guiding, and advising. And they're sensitive to ethics, morality, and higher principles. That's like the definition that it gave.
Okay.
For Kshatriyas, which are the warriors or leaders, protectors, courageous, they're strong-willed, determined, and confident. Natural leader, enjoys taking responsibility. Protective of others, willing to sacrifice for duty. Thrives in challenges, enjoys competition. Assertive, disciplined, and honorable. Can be ambitious, but with a sense of justice. So,
interesting.
Different vibe.
Okay,
Vaishya.
These are cool, hearing the actual natures.
Yeah. Vaishyas are business-minded. They seek opportunities and growth. Pragmatic, values wealth, stability, and comfort. Hardworking, strategic, and financially intelligent. Enjoys networking, trade, and negotiations. Family and community-oriented. Can be generous, but also focused on personal gain. This is super cool.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Shudra. They are loyal, hardworking, and service-oriented. Practical and hands-on. Enjoy working with tangible results. They value stability, routine, and community belonging. Not overly ambitious, but content with a secure life. Can be highly skilled in a specific craft or trade. Prefers teamwork and following leadership rather than leading.
You know what's so interesting is that if you didn't pay attention to anything Priya said, Krishna actually talks about the qualities like coming up.
Well, fantastic. I should have looked that forward.
No, but it's good though. It's good to see the modern perspective of like this.
That is
because
cool.
Krishna's talking 5,000 years ago. And I'm sure some of them is very similar, but you were talking about modern perspective. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Okay, let's
do
it.
That is cool. Yeah, we are about to hear
like a slight modern take.
Yeah.
I mean, we are the modern yogis. So.
Okay.
All right. 42?
Yes, Shamsa Sangeeta.
Okay. Krishna says, and he's describing, just so you know, he's describing Brahmanas right now. So now you're paying attention. And Krishna says, peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmanas work.
It is a little different than that description there.
Yeah, because this is the practical version.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a, But I do think they will go hand in hand.
But I think like the really good teachers and therapists or people who are learned in knowledge and like have like are really understanding of the knowledge, like they have these qualities within those professions too.
But you can have knowledge and be a Vaishya. You can have knowledge and be a Shudra. So it's not...
There's overlap for sure.
Yeah.
There's no... Knowledge is not a quality just of a Brahmana.
But we're like talking like spiritual knowledge, right? I'm thinking we're talking spiritual knowledge.
That or like in Priya's description of Brahmana, it sounded like... Well, not the one she read. It sounded more like a way your mind works naturally. Yeah.
Well, it still said values, truth, knowledge, and self-discipline. Like it still was like including purity and like that sense of, what feels like clashes for y'all? Because I feel like they kind of just add to each other.
I feel like almost for my mind, yours was easy. What you read was easier for me to conceptualize and picture than this. I felt... Oh, no. I mean, they go hand in hand. They don't clash.
Yeah, I don't think they clash either.
Okay. Text
yeah,
40.
No purport.
Yeah. No
cool, that's it. Simply.
Okay.
Text 43.
Here we are talking about Kshatriyas.
Kshatriyas.
Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas.
Yeah.
Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership are the natural qualities of work for the Kshatriyas.
Hmm.
All right. Yeah. I mean, in your description, Priya, it sounded like less emphasis on the battlefield, and it could be just anybody.
Yeah. And I always thought of it as the battlefield too. And then I had a conversation with someone who explained it to me a little bit more. And they were like, no, Kshatriyas are people who like to protect others.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be in a battlefield. It could be like someone who just speaks out for human rights, or it could be like
an activist.
It's not,
right.
It's not quite just that, right?
It could be like soldiers and policemen and firefighters.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
People
it's more a mentality.
It's like natural leaders, strong will, determined, like, you know, so. Mm.
All right. 44, Priyadarshini.
This is the description for Kshatriyas. Farming.
No, Vaishyas.
No.
Am I reading the wrong one?
44?
Oh, actually, they're both in one verse.
Oh,
no?
You were right.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, they're both. Sorry. Yeah, I only saw the end. Mm. So my bad. Okay. Farming, cow protection, and business are the natural work for the Vaishyas. And for Kshatriyas, there are labor and service to others. That's so interesting. I would not think Vaishyas are farming and cow protection.
Right.
But farming is a business too, right?
Yeah, it's just not the hustling kind of business, you know, that I would expect
of
a Vaishya.
I would picture that of farming as the labor under the Sudra category.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Fascinating.
Interesting.
Huh. Okay.
All right.
Text 45, Shama Sangeeta.
45. Okay, yeah. Krishna says, by following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. Now hear from me how this can be done.
So they were talking about happiness, and then they're like, okay, but also you should know there's these types of people. But if you actually stick to the kind of person you are and you do it well, then you can, you know, can become perfect. So like it's more
it
of your path.
It does flow actually.
It does flow, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is a bit of a flow chart that Krishna is going through. Yeah. You know?
Can you give us a quick how you conceptualize it, Shama, to a kid?
So literally like, okay, so Krishna is talking about the three modes, right? And he's giving a bunch of different things that can happen under these three modes, right? And then what do we talk about? We talked about happiness under the three modes. We talked about a worker. We talked about determination knowledge under those three modes. And then he explains the type of people also under these three modes. And then now he's talking about how
this can become the path to become perfection. Because the thing is, when you're reading these, I don't know if you're doing this, but sometimes I'm looking and seeing, where do I fit? I think we're all looking at where do we fit in the world? What service is for us? What job is for us? What, you know, partnerships are for us, whatever that is, right? And so it's like when you can find where you align or where you even want to align, understanding these and kind of doing it well is helpful in this path.
Yeah. And it's kind of like really empathetic of Krishna to go through all of these things because it's really nice for us to see where we fit because we're all different. Yeah. We all have different karma. We have different planets that are affecting us currently, right? You know what I mean? Like we're all so different. And so for him to literally go through this flow chart of like, okay, if you're like this, then do this. If you're like this, you need to do this. And then this is what you should be doing optimally. It's kind of like a beautiful like flow chart of like how it should be, you know?
Yeah.
And where to find yourself and where to elevate yourself and literally giving like step-by-step instructions.
Yeah. And how would you answer someone who asks, why did they bring it up again? Because we already talked about all of these. So what is different now from when we talked about it in the beginning chapters?
Nothing at all. It's a summary.
Or is it more conceptual before? And now it's like, okay, what about you?
Yeah.
Like, and now we're bringing it down to the very personal...
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. I mean, now that you've read the whole Bhagavad Gita, you can kind of do a self-assessment better than you could have before.
This is like when you buy a booklet and have a self-assessment at the end. And
we've learned so much, right? And so now it's like the summaries here, all the same information, honestly. Yeah.
Right.
But you're now assessing it from a different perspective.
Exactly. And he's able to weave it all together because instead of dedicating a whole chapter to a topic, he can mention it in a text and then the next text can be how it all fits in.
Yeah. Ooh. There's a little one-liner if you guys wanted for this one. It says, perfection comes when one performs their prescribed duty according to their nature.
Mm.
So that's the main point. Perfection comes when one performs their prescribed duty according to their nature.
That makes so much sense, because when you're doing what comes naturally to you, it's gonna flow.
You're going to excel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's real. It was good.
All right.
Which one are we?
46.
Oh, this is a good one.
Who's reading?
I have no idea.
Who just read the last one?
Shama Sangeeta.
Oh, yes. This is Shamali.
Shamali, say it with confidence.
Text 46. Yes.
Okay. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work.
Oh, there it is.
That's it.
It's just the one line that we just read.
By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just be yourself. Be yourself. Worship Krishna.
And worship Krishna. Yeah, yeah, literally. Yeah. It's so real.
The purport's nice also.
Go for it.
Well, you know, we already went over in the 15th chapter that we're all parts and parcels of the Lord. So Krishna is the beginning of all living entities. So then in the 7th chapter, we know that the Supreme Lord, he has the two different energies, the external energy and the internal energy. So we've established he's all pervading. So generally, Vaishnav devotees, we worship the Supreme Lord with his internal energy. And his external energy is just a perverted reflection of the internal one.
Wait, explain that.
Yes. So the external energy would be like creation, right?
Okay.
And it's a perverted reflection of the internal energy of the Lord, his internal potency. So then Prabhupada says the external energy is a background, but the Supreme Lord, by the expansion of his plenary portion as Paramatma, is situated everywhere.
Gotcha.
So yeah, and then Prabhupada continues further down to say, everyone should think that he is engaged in a particular type of occupation by Rishikesh, another name for Krishna, meaning the master of all senses. And by the result of the work in which one is engaged, Krishna should be worshipped. Mm. That is the perfection of life. Ooh, and these last couple lines, I underlined one part I loved. The Supreme Lord himself takes charge of delivering such a devotee. In whatever occupation one may be engaged, if he serves the Supreme Lord, he will achieve the highest perfection. That's so beautiful, because we don't just have to renounce everything and be serving 24/7 at a temple, which is great if you're able to do it. But don't get down if you can't, because in whatever occupation, here Prabhupada says, whatever you're doing, if you do it with the right mindset, the right internal mood, that's perfect. That's your dharma.
Yeah. Agreed.
This is this notion of like worship through action. Like all the things that matter, you don't have to change professions or change anything. You just do what you got to do and just have the right intention behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Behind those things. You know, I have a little anecdote that one day I was like totally fried after work. And because I love teaching, but I don't love the subject I'm teaching. That's what feels just misaligned. So I was driving home and I put the audible of the Bhagavatam. And I just, the exact part I put was where this king in ancient times, Prachinavar, he wanted to just renounce everything and stay in the ashram with his spiritual master. But his father came asking him, please come, the kingdom and the world needs you. You need to come here. And it was this whole debate back and forth. And finally, what triumphed was, no, you need to do your duty. It's wonderful to dedicate everything to spirituality and perfection, but you need to do your duty. And so I felt like, all right, Krishna, message received. And then, you know, I was relaying that to a friend of mine, and he shared one thing that I wrote down that was really beautiful that I didn't know. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it's also mentioned in the Jiva Dharma, talks about how a Vaishnava is supposed to behave in this world. And he's supposed to perform his duty so well with both feet planted on either side to the point where the whole world has no idea that this devotee is practicing bhakti, because he's performing all his duties so perfectly, so meticulously, that no one even knows he's a devotee. And I thought, wow, that is super cool.
Say it again.
That basically a devotee is supposed to operate in this world so well in his duty, so perfectly, so meticulously, that the whole world, or the world that's maybe not a devotee, doesn't even know he's a Vaishnav, doesn't even know he's a devotee, because he's just performing his duty so well. Mm. It's not about, I think this is different when you try to preach and make devotees, but just as far as like doing your duty, a perfect Vaishnav is supposed to behave in this way that the world doesn't even know he's a devotee. Mm. He's doing his duty so well, so perfectly. And I thought that went so well in line with one of our conversations in a previous episode where we talked about like, yeah, maybe we might not ever be in the order of a sannyasi, and like, man, so what hope is there for us in this life?
Yeah.
And no, it's okay. We will reach total perfection if we're doing our duty. One on the out, that's the thing. We should, in general, I think never, we don't know what's in someone's heart. We should never judge someone because a perfect devotee, someone might not even know they're a devotee. They're doing things so well.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think sometimes, like, I think a lot of people go through life trying to figure out what is my duty, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a tough one to figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think just be patient and know that something will come along and you know, try many different things. Like,
that's the thing. Right? It's like, how do you know what your favorite food is? It's because you've tried a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to figure out your passion and your duty in your life, you got to try a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah.
And I think even the fact that you're trying is what Krishna will look at.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I had an astrological reading some time ago and I totally forgot I forgot about it. And then recently some part of it came up and it said, like, my duty is to, like, support and uplift others. That's like sort of my karmic something. I would have to read it again to remember clearly. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. But I definitely, looking now, like, sometimes astrology can be a helpful tool to really understand yourself better and see things that you might not fully perceive. And looking back to, like, sort of what my role has been, it is, I am just so happy to be of service to others, to, like, see them uplift. And also, like, for example, this, right? I had an idea and I brought together people and then it became a thing. And it's more about, like, me supporting, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need to shine. I don't need to, like, that's not really my role. I'm happy to just bring things together and kind of create that sense of community. So it's interesting, right? When we get the opportunity to
learn more about roles. What you're saying, Priya, I think is an important point, that we don't have to have our duty or our life's mission be this huge, in your face thing.
No,
like but it can be something like that's so essential that might pass under the radar. There's this saint that I think a Catholic saint, I forget her name, maybe Teresa, but anyway, she talked about how we're all different flowers and plants in the garden of God. And that she wrote as she was dying, she died very young, that she was happy to be the little flowers that added some color in the garden of God. And she didn't have to be this huge plant. And that added something that was for God's enjoyment. Mm. So, you know, yeah.
It's a very humble way to look at things.
Yeah.
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 Say more, Shama Sangeeta.
I mean, I understand that it's important. I mean, I battle with this constantly to be like, okay, but what I want to do is make a splash. You know what I mean? Like, that is like an inherent like need or want. I don't know how to characterize it, but it's like, I want to make a splash, but I also know that, like, it's not very humble and I probably should do like something smaller and just do it well. But, you know, I just kind of fight with myself about that.
If your nature is that you want to do something that's a splash, then that's what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you feel that in your soul, Shama, that is your calling. But maybe this, you can take it as just along the way, don't beat yourself up until you get there. Like,
But how do you know if it's your soul saying it or your ego saying it?
What you do with it.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah.
The intention behind
it. What you do with it, right? Because it's like, if you want to make a big splash and then you're like, ha 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 ha, now
everyone thinks I'm amazing.
Exactly. Then then you're like, oh wait, reassess.
Yeah.
I have made a splash and I can use it for good or I can use it for ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
You know? So
that's a good point. Yeah.
Make it there. Get there first and then figure out whether you're doing it for the right intentions.
I think the intention setting in the beginning is very important too. It's like, okay, what do you want to make a splash about? What is the intention behind it? And how do you think it's going to affect people?
Agreed.
Yeah.
For sure. The intention at first matters. I was just saying, like, don't limit yourself because you might think that your intention might not be good.
Right. Then, that's a good point.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things going at once in this world. So if you're overall, you want to do good, and your ego's also happy. Okay, whoopty freaking do. Big deal.
Whoopty freaking do.
Like, great. Pat yourself on the back. You did something awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's real.
I mean, we can't say that doing this has not made ourselves feel good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's like,
not when we fight with people in the comment section. I mean, we don't personally fight. Friends fight on our behalf sometimes. It has been nice to be, you know, recognized when we go to events and stuff. Yeah. It's a little ego boost, but it's not the reason we do it.
No, definitely.
Not at all. That's because there's so much more work that goes into this podcast. That's not worth the tiny little things, you know, the little ego boost.
The little moments.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It's a fine line because it's actually counterproductive to be like, oh, no, I have nothing good going for me. I'm all bad. Because no, then how are you going to use that in service? Mm-hmm. We need to know what we're good at. And we can be happy about that. But then from there, take it the next step of, okay, but Krishna has given this to me and he could very easily take it away. Like, where did this come from?
That's real.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Text number 47.
Jinx, you owe me a tea.
Oops. I'll make you a tea after the break.
No, I'm just kidding. 47?
Priya? Yes, 47, yeah.
Okay, sure.
Why not?
Sure. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions.
I love this. Can you read it one more time?
Yeah. Ooh, that's kind of answering some of what you said earlier too. Mm-hmm. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly.
I love this.
Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions.
Interesting. Well,
yeah.
Prabhupada says some nice things in the purport, if we want to dive in.
You want to process this first? What do you guys think it means before we go deeper into what Prabhupada is saying?
If your nature is to do, let's say comedy, for instance, right?
Yeah.
Let's say your nature.
Priyadarshini is going to be a comedian.
Yeah, Priyadarshini is going to be a comedian. She's really funny and she knows that that's her thing. But then she goes and she takes a job just typing things all day.
Computer job.
And she does so good at it, but it's actually not good for her.
Mm.
Right? Like it's better to like be a crappy comedian, but like actually work at it than to do someone else's job that's not actually meant for her or what she's good at or what she even enjoys.
Mm-hmm.
It's better for her to stick to what she's crappy at and do it. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. I wonder if this is material or spiritual though. And that's my curiosity. I think it could be both.
What do you mean, material or spiritual?
Like, isn't it material though? It's an occupation.
Well, in this case, I think occupation means like dharma, like duty, like, no?
I think it's one of the four things, right?
Say more.
Like one of the four, like Kshatriya, Vaishya, Brahmana.
So yeah, sure. So if you think about,
Okay. Say if like someone is really good at business and they really, really, they want to do business, but they were born into a Brahmana family, right?
I understand what you're saying.
They
yeah.
do not have the qualifications. So it's better to like, be
yeah
you
yes
know?
Yes, yeah. yes yes
okay.
yes yeah
sense.
Yeah yeah yeah. I think it gets complicated if you get too specific.
Okay, fair.
Because if I think about Priyadarshini, who wants to be a comedian, who is like doing a computer job, but it's not, you know, and can do it well, but not so great a comedian. But comedian is the thing that Priyadarshini is
meant for.
Naturally inclined to. Then like practically speaking, you can think like, oh, well, I mean, I just do this thing for money, but then I am actually a comedian.
Yeah.
You know, I think maybe my logical mind gets complicated in that, but I do think it is saying to do what comes naturally imperfectly rather than do
something doesn't feel right.
Correct. Yeah. yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Even though you might be so great at that thing that doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Because the other part of it is, what does it mean to do something that you naturally are like naturally inclined to imperfectly? Do you think you're going to do it imperfectly for the rest of your life?
Mm.
Like, don't we get better with time?
Yeah. And if it's your natural inclination, a lot of times it's probably something that comes naturally. That's why you like it.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
good at it. It flows.
Yeah.
Like Prabhupada says, for a Kshatriya or administrator, there are... Oh, wait, before diving here, there's one other part. Anyway, I can get to the purport in a sec. Is there any other thoughts?
No, that's good.
Like, never mind.
No, go ahead.
I thought a lot of things. I was thinking, I think naturally my inclination is education, right?
Mm.
But my inclination is not actually speaking. Which is interesting and complicated. Maybe it's a psychological thing, but so I've been asked to like give class, like Bhagavad Gita class at the temple. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh no, Prabhuji, sorry, I am not qualified. And they're like, you have a podcast, you like to talk. And I'm like, actually, I don't. I don't know how to explain it, but I love knowledge and education and like, it's complicated.
That's so funny. I got asked to speak too. And I was like, I am so deeply unqualified. And they're like, no, you speak. No. I don't think you even listen to the podcast. Yeah, if you think that I'm qualified to speak on it.
People who think we're experts because we have this podcast, do not listen to the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Because they would know real well. If you're a real one listening to this podcast from day one, you know we're not qualified to give class at the temple.
You know we're your buddies. We're nothing beyond that. We're peers here, okay?
Yep.
Okay. Anyways.
The purport, Shamali.
Yeah.
Shamali might be a little bit more qualified.
No. So Prabhupada says, one should not imitate another's duty. So basically a man whose nature attracted to a certain kind of work done by a Shudra should not artificially claim to be a Brahmana. He starts giving examples, although he might have been born into a Brahmana family. So that's what you were saying, Shama. And then in this way, I underlined this part I like, in this way, one should work according to his own nature, and then no work is abominable if performed in the service of the Lord. So what does that mean, abominable? And then Prabhupada goes into a few examples of maybe not great things in each category that they just have to do because it's part of that work, but it's okay. Because for example, for a satriya or administrator, there might be so many abominable things.
Wait, satriyas are not administrators?
I don't know, but he puts those two the examples there. Prabhupada says, for a satriya or administrator, there are so many abominable things. For example, a satriya has to be violent to his enemies, but such violence and duplicity accompany political affairs.
I think it's a typo. I think it's supposed to say vaishyas.
Really?
Yeah, because kshatriyas... Sorry, say one more time and then I'll tell you.
I don't know. He says, for a satriya or administrator, there are so many... Or like a separate category. Or administrator. Okay. There are many abominable things. They have to be maybe duplicit. They have to kill their enemies if they're a satriya. But such violence or duplicity accompanies political affairs. But a satriya is not supposed to give up his occupational duty and try to perform the duties of a brahmana. It's just part of what comes with the role, you know? Mm-hmm. And if we try to act to satisfy Krishna, then it's okay. For example, Arjuna was a satriya. He didn't want to fight the other party. But if it was to perform his duty for the sake of Krishna, then there was no fear of degradation. So we might think certain things are like, oh, that's bad, bad karma. But if it comes along with the job title, the responsibility that you need to do, it's okay.
So, but it's also kind of saying like, if your nature is to be a warrior,
right,
and you go to war and you kill,
yeah,
you're not accumulating sinful reaction.
Exactly.
But if your nature is to be a seller, mm-hmm. and then you go kill people,
right,
you are going to accumulate sinful reaction.
That is so interesting, right? Like if you're not doing what comes naturally, then you're not in your lane. You're not in your dharma.
Yeah. Right. It's not your position to do so.
Right. So basically, like a little summary of what Krishna's trying to tell Arjuna is by sticking to his natural duty, emphasis on the word natural, Arjuna will be true to his nature, channel his inner warrior constructively, and progress towards perfection.
I have a good way that we talked about, like comedian and typewriter, typer, whatever.
Computer.
Yeah, computer person.
Computer
worker. So like, another example is like something like a gifted artist might struggle to make a living, but finds fulfillment in their path. Mm-hmm. Now, if that artist chooses to become a lawyer just to please others, they might succeed externally, but they might feel miserable inside.
Ah, right. That's interesting because we were talking about happiness right before this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good segue. Happiness leading into, it makes so much sense now. It's happiness connected. Leading into your duty.
Following your nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is tied to happiness, right?
Totally.
If you're trying to do something that you really, really know in your heart you don't want to do, but it's like because of money or status or ego or whatnot, you're going to feel miserable doing it.
That's a great example.
Very good.
A great way to end the episode.
Yeah. So please join us next time for chapter 18, text number 48.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.